We're talking with the greatest anglers in the world, and I've got with me an old friend, and I'm so tickled to have you, you know, with us here on Bass University TV, the great Brent Ayler.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We do go back a long time.
I know.
We met at the Cumberland EverStart Championship back in 04.
Was it 04?
I think it was 04.
Wow. I know
there. A long time ago.
I might be going back. Well, I'm hoping to go back there because I'm going to be getting in those FLWs, the Northern Division and the championships back down there.
Is it really?
Yeah. And I thought I would look at that. And I thought that'd be fun to get back down there. I haven't been since.
I haven't either.
Yeah. All you did was win it, you know? That was the beginning of the beginning for you, wasn't it?
That was the first national or, you know, big tournament that I ever won. I won a few team tournaments close by the house, but I'd never that was the first time I won a big tournament like that.
And,
you know, it kind of set the way for me getting to where I am now, I guess. You know,
yeah.
It's been a long road. It's hard to believe it's been that long, you know. And
that's 16 years ago.
16 years ago. And it was – so that happened in 04, and then that was kind of – you know, I already kind of decided I was going to fish the tour in 05.
Mm-hmm.
But that was – you know, it was interesting going from that to in 04 winning that to going fishing in 05 on a tour level in these lakes I'd never seen before. And, man, I got smoked in a couple of those tournaments, you know, starting that year. And I remember just being down and out. I didn't know what I was going to do, and I didn't know how to compete with these guys. And
you figured it out.
It was a long road, believe me. Yeah. Trial and error is you know, it was very true. I mean, I learned a lot because I failed a lot.
Well, I saw you put the work in, and I thought that was great because after we had met, you know, in that tournament, and, you know, I would see you, you know, practice, because I'd be out practicing, and, you know, I'd see you just constantly putting the work in, doing extra practice time and getting it figured out. And, it seemed to go your way after a while.
Yeah, it has.
Now it keeps going your way.
Not all the time, but yeah, it's still a battle. But yeah, it's been I've been fortunate for sure.
Yeah, that's great. And we are here filming on, and we were talking about this. This is the Ike Live boat build that Brian Carpenter put together.
It's pretty cool. It's a great looking boat. I love the wrap on it, the carbon fiber on the rails here. It's a great looking boat.
Yeah, we totally rebuilt. It had holes in it, welded.
Oh my goodness.
This was headed for the junkyard, and now look at it.
Oh man, that's great. Now, did he use that Flex Seal stuff that you spray on? Is that how he welded it together on the bottom?
Maybe.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Maybe. That stuff's pretty tough. But you can check
it. He did it. There was a hole in his boat, and he fixed it with Flex Seal.
Yeah.
Come on.
Heck, man. He was driving across the bay. But this, you can see all this on the Ike Live and Ike's YouTube channel and a lot of his social. You can see all the boat build. You should. I'm trying to get Brian to bring the before pictures out here because it's pretty awesome to see how it turned out.
That's great.
But we're here. We're talking Bass University stuff, and you've been a Bass University instructor for a long time. I appreciate that, and you always bring it. You know, you bring the techniques. You bring some pretty advanced stuff that really helps people as we get, you know, passersby walking in front of our camera lens over there. We are live at the Classic as usual, but I appreciate you doing that. And one of the things that we're going to talk about right now is something that you've really used a lot. You're kind of famous for finesse fishing. You're one of those guys that, you know, you're really good at that technique. And the Neko rig or Neko rig, depending on how you say it, is one of those techniques.
It is.
And you were at the beginning when you started doing this. You were one of the first guys that go out and have success with this.
You know what's funny is I was born and raised in California, still live in California, and you know, a lot of the stuff, the drop shot, the Neko, whatever you call it. I call it the Neko rig. You know, we learned this stuff from the Japanese anglers that came over
and
to fish the U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'd fish the One Bass Circuit U.S. Open or sometimes the Western BASS Invitationals. And we learned all the stuff from the Japanese anglers that brought it over. The drop shot, you know, I was one of the first guys that threw a drop shot in, you know, out west because I drew some of these Japanese anglers and they taught me how to do it. And the Neko rig, I saw guys fish this. They would fish with me at the U.S. Open at Lake Mead, and they'd be throwing three-pound tests at Lake Mead, and they would catch it. Well, they would get the bites, but they'd break every one of them off because there's shallow brush. You know, doesn't dance two-pound test. It just the actual line will or their teeth will cut the line. So, you know, I've seen this stuff from day one, but it's I've only learned from the guys that have showed me, and it's the Japanese anglers that have come over and done this. And, you know, they're the ones that, that deserve the credit for the drop shot, for the Nako rig. You know, yep. They have shown us a lot of really good effective techniques, and they really do work out here.
And the Tokyo rig's the latest and greatest that everybody's using.
Yep.
You
can
keep seeing that pop up in the top 10s, you know, right now.
For sure.
But explain this rig and how you rig it. Let's start there. You know, what are we doing here?
Okay, so the number one bait that I throw is the Yamamoto 5-inch Senko. But really, you can take any straight tail worm.
I haven't heard of that bait. Are they readily available?
They are readily available. They're very soft. You catch a lot of fish on them. You you go through a lot of baits.
Yep.
No, they. I tell them it's basically these things are about as heavy as gold. When you get a box full of Senkos that show up in the mail, it weighs 50 pounds for a little box. But you know, heavy salt on these things, and that actually does help with the Nako rig because you can use a light weight. Now I could take a 5-inch Senko and fish it in 50 feet of water.
Mm-hmm.
And I take a 3/32 ounce nail weight.
50 feet of water.
50 feet of water, because you think about it, a Senko falls really slow, weightless, because it falls horizontal. And when it's falling, it wiggles. Well, mm-hmm. if you put a weight on the front, now it acts like a missile. It acts mm-hmm. like a bullet. It's going to fall straight down. A lot less resistance, exactly. So you take a 3/32 ounce nail weight, put it right through the nose of that bait, and you thread it all the way on, so you know you don't even know that weight is in there. So it's kind of crooked. I did not do a good job. You want it really straight, but right now it looks just like a Senko, but that weight is in there. Now it's going to fall head first, just like you would have a slip sinker on there, and that's all you do. You put that on. I put a ring on there. Now here's the trick. I use a Gami. It's a stinger hook that I helped design for Gamagatsu. We make a weedless one, we make a non-weedless one, and we call it the wacky stinger, the wacky weedless stinger. But here's what I like to do. There's the egg sac on the Senko right here. What I try to do is I put that ring at the very front. If this is where the weight
an
is.
O-ring.
An O-ring.
You use the O-ring, which we don't have here for display, but a lot of you guys know what that's about. And we show that on the website in a lot of different places.
And here's the thing is I always use a tungsten. I use an arc tungsten nail weight.
Mm-hmm.
They're expensive. If you don't put that O-ring on there, on about your third cast, you're going to cast it and it's going to go flying off, and there goes your $1 weight that you just put in there.
Yep.
But you need that tungsten weight in there because it's a small profile and it won't mess up the action of this worm or deform it in any way because you want it really straight. But O-ring on the front side, if here's the head, that's where the nail weight is. Here's the egg sac. You want it on the very front of that bait, right where the egg sac starts. Now, here's the other part. Is you take that stinger hook, you want to put it in the bait, but under that O-ring. And the reason I do that, and you want to go from head to tail, because when it's sitting on the bottom, it's sitting like this, and I want that hook point up. Because what happens is when they bite it, they almost always follow it, and they come down on top of it. With that hook point up, when you set the hook, you're going to hook that fish in the roof of his mouth. If you go down or to the side, you might catch him in the corner, you might catch him in the tongue, that mm-hmm. fish is gonna die. You run it with that hook point up. So when they pin it on the bottom, that hook point is always up. Now the reason for going in the bait and out of the bait and not just under that O-ring is if you only pin it underneath that O-ring, when they come and bite it, they'll fold this worm over, and what will happen, or they'll fold it sideways, that hook will turn in itself.
Look at that.
It'll turn into the bait, and you'll set the hook, and you'll lose the fish, and you reel it in, and the hook point will be inside the bait, and you'll never even hook
that
fish.
It happened to me and other guys a million times.
So run it in the bait, you know, piercing the bait, but under that O-ring. So that O-ring is only security so
that
it doesn't come off. So when it tears, when I reel it in and I see that it's just resting underneath that O-ring, all I do is pull it out, move it over just a 1/16 or 1/8 of an inch, and go under the O-ring, pin the bait again. You can go all the way around that worm before you have to put a new one on.
Right.
And so you go all the way around the whole worm. But I fish it like a drop shot. I fish it like a shaky head. I cast it, let it sink to the bottom, and I shake it. I'll drop vertical on them as well. But it's such an effective tool. I can't even remember the last time I've thrown a shaky head because I've replaced it with the Nako rig.
Gotcha.
So you've
replaced the shaky head.
I have.
When do you throw this versus, say, a drop shot?
A drop shot I use for mostly now if I'm dropping vertical on them really deep.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll switch it up with the Nako rig just to see if they bite it better. But This does fall slower than a drop shot. You know, I can throw a quarter ounce or a 3/8 ounce and get it down there faster. But if I'm casting a lot, I'm almost always using that now just because it's so effective. And it seems like more and more people are using a shaky head, and now I think they're kind of transitioning to this kind of bait. But when this thing's on the bottom, it has a completely different action than anything else because it acts like a wacky rig when it's on the bottom. When you pull it, when you shake it, this bait is acting like a wacky rig. It's shaking and moving this way instead of being a horizontal presentation like a drop shot and moving this way, or a Texas rig that's just going to lay on the bottom like this and going across. This is sitting upright, and every time you move it, it's sitting there shaking the whole time you're moving it. So it's just something they haven't seen, and I think that from what I can tell, a lot of the bites that you get on this bait are really the same. Every bite, when you get the bite, your line goes slack, and what that tells me is that fish comes up behind that bait, and they're looking at it. And when you're shaking it, it's sitting there moving like this, and it takes it, and they're following it, following it, following it, and then finally they decide to bite it. So if you think about that fish that's following it, and he comes down to it, and he finally decides to bite it, well, he's going to bite it and continue on with it, which means that he's been looking at it. So every time you get a bite and your line goes slack, I know he was looking at it for a long time because when he finally decided to bite it, he's been going that direction. He bites, and he just keeps right on going.
Right.
And so I know that those fish are looking at it for a long time before they bite, whereas if it's another bait, they may not look at it for a long time and just – or they were looking at it, and they decided not to bite it, and they just swim off.
Right,
and I feel like you get more bites with it.
Well – it's exposed hook. Now, I know there's weedless hooks. Do you, like when you're dealing with brush piles, do you go weedless or do you constantly fish this exposed even around grass and brush?
No, I fish it exposed just like this. The only difference is I go to a we make the wacky weedless stinger at Gamagatsu, and it has two titanium weed guards that are on there that split the hook point this way, and you can fish it through brush.
Right.
It's still going to snag, don't get me wrong, because they're designed to fold down when a fish bites it. But I can actively fish in brush now and not lose the baits as often. Believe me, you're going to lose them, but you're going to lose them more than you are to shaky head. Shaky head or Texas rig will come through a lot better, but you will never get this hook back if you throw it in a brush pile without the weed guard on there. So
I'm
not afraid to throw it in brush piles anymore because like those titanium weed guards are very strong and they're very effective. And now you can throw it places where you couldn't before.
It's interesting that you fish this vertical. Like I know I do. I use this technique. I'm learning and getting better with this style. But you catch them just dropping on them.
Yeah, I drop on them a lot. And it might be because it's probably faster to me to drop that than it is to set that down and grab a drop shot and drop over them. But sometimes I do feel like they bite it better because it's something they haven't seen. You know, and again, it's you're essentially doing the same thing when you're casting it. You're dropping to them, and it's something they haven't seen before, and it's on the bottom, and it wiggles more. And, you know, I catch a lot of fish vertical on it. But I switched over to Garmin this year, and I've been using that Panoptix Live, and you know, I'm sight fishing, you know, dropping on them, but they're 30, 40, 50 feet away from me now. I can't tell you how many fish I've caught at home on an Naco rig where I see them all the way out there, and I can make a cast, and I can watch that Naco rig fall to them, and they'll either bite it on the sink or I watch them follow it to the bottom.
Right.
And then I'll sit there and shake it, shake it, shake it, and sure enough, same thing that always happens. You get a bite, and the line just goes slack because they're swimming right towards you with it.
Yeah, that's amazing technology, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that, but first I want to challenge you because nobody's beaten me yet. What is the deepest that you have caught bass? I know you're from the West Coast, and you guys fish deep, too.
I've caught them in 90.
90?
90 feet, but I only caught two because both of them, I killed both of them. I said, I'm not going to do that anymore, but you can catch every one of them in 90, and
that's
not good for them, believe me. When they do not want to swim back down, and a bird flies off with them later. So, you know, you don't want to do that very
often.
Those
were largemouth or spot?
Largemouth in 90 feet, yeah. Wow. My home lake, there's a ditch that runs through the middle of the lake, and they were down in the bottom of this ditch in 90, and they were untouched fish, and everyone you dropped on, they'd bite. And it was kind of crazy. It's not good for them. I wouldn't do it anymore because I just didn't want to, you know, kill these fish. I'm out fishing for fun, and a bass is not designed to go from 90 to zero in you know, a short period of time.
I know, and now you're going to make me look like an environmental disaster because I did. I caught them out of 100 feet.
Oh, my goodness.
And they were smallmouth.
Really?
Yeah.
And where was that at?
It was Lake George in New York.
Okay.
And they were on the bottom of the lake, and they're chasing schools of perch and smelt around the bottom of the lake, and you could just find the bait balls and drop a jigging spoon down on them, and you bring them up
That's
from
crazy.
Between 90 and 100 feet. And but they would you would, like, when you would call, you'd let the smallmouth go, and they'd go right back down.
I think they're more durable than a largemouth. Yeah. I really do. And you know, to have them go down to 100 like that, I bet you there's something about them. There's something about that water up there that it's probably just they're probably used to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas for me, they're not used to that. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, believe me, there's fish you catch in 40 feet of water that won't survive.
Right.
You know, and you catch one in 100 like that, and you will. So it's their environment and those fish. And believe me, those smallmouth, anyone out there that's caught largemouth and smallmouth, they know a smallmouth is the bully in the in the bunch, you know.
Well, it's for the first time ever you have finished second place to me. I got one in the win column. But you're actually second, though, because nobody – like, I've heard 60 feet, a lot of guys, but you're the first person I've ever
heard. Yeah, 90. And I'll tell you one quick story about this same ditch at this home lake of mine. You know, back in the day when swim baits first came out, the only one that we had was the Optima swim bait. That was the only big trout swim bait that we had. And I'd get out to that same ditch where these fish were, and the sides were 50. And when I say a ditch, it's probably 30 yards wide. It's not a narrow ditch. It's a big channel. And these fish, the sides would be in 50, but these fish would suspend in 50 over that 90.
Mm-hmm.
And you could get right over the top of these fish. You could take that big Optima swim bait back in the day, and you could drop it, and that thing would not get 10 feet under the boat before those fish would start to swim up to get it.
Wow.
So then 50 feet of water,
they
would see that swim bait, and they would meet it in 20 to 30 and eat it.
Wow.
Dropping vertical with an 8-inch swim bait, and I'm not joking, the second it would hit the water, they'd start to swim up.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, speaking of that, you talked about this this Garmin technology, this forward-facing sonar, and it's pretty amazing. It's changing your fishing.
It is. It is. Now, you know, when they're on structure – not only do you see the structure away from you, but you can see the fish on the structure. And again, I fished two tournaments this year with Garmin, and both of them have been in less than a foot of water. So I haven't used that forward facing as much. But when I was at home breaking my boat in, we have structure. We had man-made rock piles in the water that are anywhere from 10 to 20 feet of water. And then we have sunken boats. We have a tire reef that's these random tractor tires that are down in 30 feet of water. And in the past, I would always waypoint, you know, the structure, and I'd come back and I would cast to my waypoints. And about every third or fourth cast, you'd actually hit the tire.
Yeah, if you're lucky. If you're lucky. Good.
Correct. So
it's hard to do.
And that's when you get the bite. You know, you make five casts, you don't get a bite, and on your sixth cast, you finally feel it on that tire. You finally feel it on that rock. And when you climb it over is when the one bites it. And the first day out using LiveScope, I pull up to these tires, and I look out, and sure enough, there's a tire. And I even see a tire sitting up, you know, on end like this, and I can see right through the tire, you know, and it's in 30 feet of water, and it's 50 feet away, and I can see that.
Yep.
I fished the first couple tires, and I hit the tire every single cast. Every cast, I hit this tire. I hit that tire. I mean, this is the first day out in my boat with a Garmin. And then I get over this next tire, and I see three bass sitting on top of the tire. And I'm like, why am I wasting my time on these tires that don't have any fish on it? Now I'm going to catch them off of this tire. And I slow down, and I make more casts to that tire, and I catch the fish on the one where I see them.
Right.
And you know they're bass because you throw to it, and they follow your bait down. Or they bite it on the sink, you know, and I'm seeing that. And now I can actually see the fish out there, and they're less pressured, you know, because now I'm not getting on top of them. These fish, they learn. They learn just like we do.
Yep.
If they're sitting there in their home and they feel the sonar, they feel the trolling motor ahead of them, and a bait drops to them, they're gone. A lot of times you can't even get a bait to them because they're gone.
Right.
Now I can get a bait to them before they feel me there.
Have you you've been with this long enough to be able to, you know, the thing that worries me, I'm chasing ghosts. I see the fish there. I can't make them bite. I don't know what they are. Have you been in that situation?
You know, what I've noticed is that you there's so many times that these fish are looking at your bait that you don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I know now, is that you are casting the fish that are there. Mm-hmm. And when you don't get a bite, they're not there. But when I see them, I know they're there. And I think there's a lot of fish that just won't bite.
Right.
And there's nothing you can do. What I can see that is the only downfall with Garmin, and it's not a downfall, is the fact that I might spend too much time on these fish that are really not able to bite. In the past, you don't get a bite and you go, I have to move on.
Right.
And now I go, I need to figure out how to get that fish to bite because I see him there.
Yeah. make me nuts. I'm like, yeah, I know I can catch. But, you know, at the same time, you know, knowing that they're there, you just, I guess it's another thing that you have to learn. You have to learn to recognize when they're catchable and when they're not.
Yeah, and I think that I've used it to my advantage now to where I can see them there. I can slow down, have an effective cast, but I know enough now to go, I'm going to come back to those fish. You know, now I can move off, and it may only take 10 minutes. It might take 15 minutes. It might take an hour, but now it's a spot where I can go to somewhere else, cast to this fish, he doesn't bite, cast that fish, I catch him, and go, you know what, there are three on that spot, and slide over, and you'll get one on your first cast. And I've done that a bunch where, or even at a different angle. You cast to a target, and you don't get a bite, there's not a fish there. But if I see him, I know that they're there. But if I get on this side and throw at a different angle, I can get those fish to bite. So now I have that confidence to kind of move around and have a change in direction and get that fish to bite.
Right. You're learning. It's a constant learning process, I guess. And you guys have been fishing shallow.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, because I've not used this technology, I wonder what the depth that you can have use it as an effective tool would be.
The deepest I've caught a fish so far is I think 45.
Yeah.
And I believe you can use it deeper, but it's just that the fish haven't been there. When we were at Lake Eufaula, I saw a fish on dock poles and 3.5 feet of water that I pitch a bait to, and he follows the bait to the bottom and will follow it. Every time I move it, he does that. He kind of moves to it.
Right.
And then he moves to it. And then he gets to a certain point where he doesn't want to follow it anymore. Mm-hmm. And he turns and goes right back to his dock pole. And I reel in, I make another cast, and he follows it right down to the bottom again. And then 2 days later, I'm going along, and I see a laydown. It's a submerged laydown, and I just see the top of the tree sitting out, and it's 25 feet in front of me. And I see two fish sitting on the laydown. And I throw 1.5 across it, and they all chase it. These two fish chase it. They don't bite it, and they go right back to it. I throw a spinnerbait across it. They don't bite it. I pick up my flip bait, and I flip in there, and he follows it right to the bottom. And same thing, he follows it, but doesn't bite it. But I saw those fish 25, 30 feet in front of me in 4 feet of water. The boat's in four.
Mm-hmm.
The laydown's in four. And I see him on that laydown, you know, and I didn't catch him.
Right.
Later, I did catch one, and it was, you know, a pound and a half, and I couldn't score it because we have a 2 pound minimum. But I saw that fish there, you know, and it's 4 feet of water. It's a laydown. We fish laydowns all the time. And we never do. We fish docks all the time. We don't catch one. I can see him, and I can see my bait follow them, and I see him follow.
Wow.
So
that's fascinating.
It's changing the game. I mean, I can't imagine. Now they have the perspective mode that you actually get a 3D image of everything because they can take that transducer and turn it sideways, and now you get a plain picture of what's out there. And, I mean, I have no idea what they have under the wraps that's going to be coming out soon, but it's changing the game.
Man, that's great. I think I would have a lot of fun just going out and –
it's
looking,
unbelievable. I'm telling you, there's so many times where you're looking more than you're fishing because you see so many things that are so cool down there that you've never seen before.
Yeah.
And I found myself doing that I was looking at it so much that I wasn't even aware of my surroundings because I was so aware of what was happening down there and out there now.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's crazy. Amazing technology, guys. You got to check that out. And sonar, it continues to be our you know, consistently most asked question.
Really?
The new technology.
Oh,
guys want to know, you know, which ones do I get? Which one's going to help me?
Yeah.
So I appreciate you sharing that with us. And you're doing the MLF. You're going to be, where are you at next?
We're at Lake Fork this next week. In fact, I'm leaving the show here Sunday afternoon. I'm going to be in Texas Sunday night. And then we start practice on Wednesday. You know, it's setting up to be a crazy tournament. You know, Lake Fork, whenever they have a bigger tournament there, you know, whenever we've gone there in the past, big fish is over 10 pounds. I'm kind of scared of what is going to happen when you set the hook out there this time of year early.
Yeah.
Every time we've been there, it's been a little bit later in the year, post-spawn. I've never fished it pre-spawn like this or spawn. I don't know what's going to be happening once we get there. But there's so many big fish there, it would not surprise me to see a 12-pounder caught in the tournament.
I'm sure that's, you know, it could happen.
Yeah.
Are you at a 2 pound limit there too?
Two or three. I don't know what they've done on this one. I think it might be a 2 pound minimum.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. You know, we started off this year and I wasn't worried about it at Eufaula because I know there's a lot of big fish there, and it wasn't really a problem for me until the third day. The third day was the first day I actually caught a fish in that one something pound range. Mm-hmm. I either caught a 10 incher or I caught a 3 to 6 pounder.
Okay.
But on that third day, I ended up catching three or four that were a pound and a half, pound 13s. And then we went to Okeechobee after, and Had a bad cold front, wind, water temperature dropped 20 degrees, and then it was really tough fishing. And we caught plenty of short, those 1.6s to 1.13s, and it was hard to catch one there, period. And it would have been nice to have a lower minimum scoreable fish on that, but they set it at 2 pounds, and that's what it is. So, yeah. It's tough fishing. No one has ever had a minimum that high before. We always have a size limit of 14 inches. Yep. You catch a 14-inch bass anywhere in the country, and it's going to weigh, somewhere between 1.6, 1.8 to who knows over 2. But so many times you're out there and you catch that fish that you need to get that scoreable fish, and it's a 1.13, 1.14, 1.15, and it's non-scoreable fish.
I know. Well, we watch the hearts break. Yeah. All over.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. It's unreal.
It's fun. I like the upgrade, honestly. Yeah. Like to 2 pounds. I think it makes it more interesting to me. And it's a lot of fun to watch, and we look forward to seeing you out there. We'll be pulling for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. It should be fun.
Yeah, excited. Well, I appreciate you sharing all this great stuff with us.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Hopefully we'll get you at the Bass U in the classroom or out on the water sometime soon, and we'll be doing stuff with you. We'll look for that coming. And you can see a lot of the Brent Ayler stuff on BassU.tv that exists right now. So you go check him out. A lot of great stuff. Always brings the goods. And we're going to be back more with the greatest anglers in the world teaching about what they're really good at. Pete Kluzak for Bass University TV.